One thing which I learned over a period of time, as far as relationships are concerned, is that they are set prior to speech. I don't think I've spoken much about this aspect of relationships because it can come across as a bit abstract. We can approach this from various ways. One is, I have a friend who has mastered the art of face reading. And I just had to show him a photograph of someone and he would describe the personality based on the forehead, the eyes, the nose, the cheeks, everything. He kept insisting I learn this craft from him, but I didn't have that interest. I did an inner chamber course, a Tibetan program, in which it said that a person's face speaks far more about the person than when the person speaks. And the reason is that the face is a product of nature, an accumulation of what the body-mind organism has gone through since birth till the present moment. With speech, a lot of conditioning comes in. It is not spontaneous speaking because the words we use are conditioned by our life's experiences. And so they would rather trust their intuition when they saw a person's face than when they listened to a person. Now, by and by, what I saw was, and I believe science even supports this fact, that when two people meet, and it's not a karmic bond like family, the relationship is already decided. It may appear that two people come together, have a conversation, and may perhaps argue with each other. Let's say you go into a shop and you argue with the salesman. Or you realize you have a lot in common as a process of interacting and engaging. It appears like that. But based on my understanding, and when I've discussed this topic with spiritual masters, Sufi mystics, I've concluded that that is all secondary. Because finally, it is two vibrations attracting each other. It begins and ends with that. And either these vibrations will repel or attract when they come together. That coming together is predetermined, which is called Rinanubandhan. The coming together is predetermined. And then the drama of life, based on the principle of doership, takes over as far as that relationship is concerned. Then what happens? The Rinanubandhan can get perpetuated in an endless loop. Or with the awareness and understanding, there is a break in that loop. Because our bondage is the loop of action-reaction. That is the bandhan. So if I meet someone and we don't get along on a particular topic or an issue or whatever it is, and I have the full and total understanding that whatever happens is the will of God, nobody is the doer of their action, and the person in front of me is entitled to their point of view, just as I am. Now, with this understanding, I will not go down this road of arguing. I will state my point once, and I will lay down my sword, as Joel Goldsmith says, or to use his other phrase, I will withdraw all opposition. So I may not agree with you, but I've kept my sword down, withdrawn all opposition. It is not my job to convince you that you are wrong, because you may not be wrong. You are an expression of God, just as I am. In this case, we have differing points of view. Now, when I lay down my sword, the bandhan is no longer a bandhan. It is dissolved. So, what could be an endless chain of action, reaction, action, reaction, action, reaction, cause, effect, cause, effect, cause, effect, till your last breath? When that is given up, you find that the bondage in relationships is dissolving. The bondage is based on assuming the other person is the doer. Supposing God stood in front of you, the form of God you identify with, and said something which you didn't agree with, would you start convincing God who is in front of you about your point of view and go on and on and on? Or you may say, hey, listen, God, this is my understanding. I may be right, I may be wrong. But this opposition we have with the other, this creates the bondage. The opposition is within us because we are opposed to another, opposed to their point of view, opposed to what they say, opposed to what they do, which does not mean that in the bondage of that relationship, we don't say what we have to say and express ourselves. We say what we have to say. But if we keep saying what we have to say, isn't that a form of violence? If you're telling someone 10 times the same thing, what is it implying? Listen to me. My point of view is extremely important, so I won't say it once, I'll say it 10 times. So the ego has come in through the back door. Now imagine if with this understanding that everyone is an instrument of God, we step out into the world from tomorrow, meet whom we have to meet, whoever life sends our way, and see the face which comes before us and accept it for what it is, we will find that even prior to that interaction, the space we are operating from is different because we are open to the other. Our prejudices have been kept aside. We have built up judgments and opinions on people's faces. It is so subtle. From childhood, in the growing up years, we've already developed a system of liking certain faces and not liking others. It operates in different ways. Supposing as a child, some kind of people loved us more. Anyone who looks like them, we get attracted to. And we build these. Our parents, we absorb their prejudices as far as physicality of people is concerned. In subtle ways, this develops. And then we find we are not open to the other. And so by and by, with this understanding that ultimately it is two fields of vibration coming together by the will of God to complete whatever is meant to be completed, we find that our resonance is a gentler one because we are now in harmony with the flow of life, with accepting people the way God has made them, accepting ourselves the way God has made us. And little then do we have a need to oppose. I remember when I met Shafi Baba the first time, it was very peculiar. I had his address. There was no Google Maps at that time. And the landmark was something called Mumtaz Hotel or something. Mamta Hotel or Mumtaz Hotel, I don't remember. And I was so eager to meet him that I told my family, we were going on the way from the airport to the Taj Hotel, that I'll ask the driver that if this is on the way somewhere, I'd like to stop. He said it was on the way, but we'll have to find it. We couldn't find it. Then someone told us that this Mumtaz Hotel is in so-and-so location, or Mamta Hotel, whatever it is. We reached that location. Then I got off the car, I asked someone on the road. He said, there are two hotels by the same name. Which is the one you want to go to? One called some Grand Mamta Hotel, one called some Mumtaz Hotel. It was very confusing. And I was feeling bad because everyone was hungry. They had to go for lunch. So as a last resort, I went to another shop just to make sure that this person, what he said was correct. And he pointed out, he said, udhar hai, there was a signage on the top of the building. One Mamta Hotel is there and the other one is in that direction. And that first Mamta Hotel was walking distance. He pointed it out. And he said, kidhar jana hai aapko? So I said, I have nothing to lose. So I said, ye inka naam hai aur inka ek dukaan hai jidhar ye bechte hai shawl wagaira ye wo. He said, are kya baat kar rahe ho? Ye to humare bagal mein hai. His was the next shop. This was the corner shop where they serve tea and all that stuff. And so I went in. Met him, introduced myself, blah, blah, blah. Then after about 3-4 years, I was sharing with him how nice it was to make his acquaintance and be introduced to him and get to know him. And he said that this was decided the day I walked into his shop the first time. The relationship was already decided. And that was not about me being special. He said anyone who walks into his shop besides a tourist, He knows. How does he know? We don't even share the same language. We don't share the same conditioning. So it is seen, not just by the mind. So it appears that we have relationships in our life, and then we have to see sometimes they are harmonious, sometimes they are not. It's like a linear process, which it is not. If our seeing itself changes, that change impacts the relationship. It is not a linear process. It can be a linear process initially, appears like that, but actually it is not. That is why I really liked what Eckhart Tolle said in one of his books. I don't know if it was The Power of Now or New Earth. That if two people are fighting or arguing, it takes just one to be present, just as a field of presence. Because you are no longer invested in that dynamic. Then he says, the other person is foxed. What do I do now? I'm not getting the opposition to feed on. It is quite disarming, you know, because you're looking for a fight and there's nobody in front of you to fight with because the person is just open space. It takes just one, not both, just one to be the field of presence. So if you find as life goes on, that generally it's a 50-50. Some relationships harmonious, half are not. With the same person half the time like this, half the time like that. Again, I'm not referring to hardwired karmic relationships like family. I'm talking of the rest, because that, as we discussed yesterday, is a different dynamic. But if you find there's no change in that, then it means that this whole aspect of relationships needs to be looked at again. That is why Ramana Maharshi said that in relationships there are no others. And then you find like attracts like. Generally, you are in anubandhan with some might still be so strong that they are the antagonists. But generally, you find you're flowing much lighter and easier with people. And if you resolve it with one person, as I said yesterday, the issue is resolved for everyone. Supposing I am constantly getting into an argument on either particular issue, so with anyone on that issue I'm arguing, or with a particular person, it's going on and on and on. When that is resolved with the understanding and that dynamic collapses, I find that dynamic has collapsed for all relationships because they're all one, which is the relationship with oneself. So supposing I now realize there's no point arguing beyond a point, that understanding has come in, I'll soon find it's not just with that person. That need has dropped as far as everyone is concerned because the issue has been resolved. Then you find you are no longer repeating yourself, but the silence within is repeating itself. Because when you're no longer repeating yourself, you're silent, which is the death of the thinking mind, of the ego trying to prove, I am the victor, I am the chosen one, I am right, you are wrong. You said one thing now you're saying something else. How can you do that? He did it. How can you do that? We don't know. People do it. What to do? Even that is accepted. But as far as you are concerned, no dialogue. So when the mind by and by becomes vacant like that, especially on the subject of relationships, it is creating a vibration of presence, which was always there, covered and clouded by the ego, which wants to be right all the time. Vibration has changed now. The tongue is a weapon which we use frivolously. There's fire on the tongue. There's a shakti. It burns up an emotion. If you say something which you feel deep inside, already in the process of saying it, something is getting burnt up. The enlightened ones, they say, Saraswati dances on their tongue. There's actually a nadi here at the tip which opens up. And Saraswati dances on their tongue because they choose their words carefully. I wouldn't even say that. I would say that the words which emanate from their mouth are so loaded with power because they are coming from presence, not from reactivity, and words are powerful. I met a yogi who could place someone 10 feet in front of him and say something, and that person would fall down. So every relationship which presents itself to us where there's a bit of conflict, maybe an argument with someone in the queue who's trying to go past you, maybe someone on the road, anything, someone you meet at a party who has a differing point of view, is an opportunity to see whether to perpetuate the bandhan or be free of it. By free of it, I don't mean ending the relationship, but ending the doership attributed in the relationship and accepting that everyone is an instrument of God. Would anyone like to share something or ask something?
In the light of this understanding, what are your thoughts on setting boundaries in karmic relationships?
It's actually a very good question, but it has to be first researched that this need to set the boundary, where is it coming from? Supposing I feel I have to set the boundary in a certain relationship, but I don't have the understanding that the other is not the doer of their actions. I don't have the understanding that everyone is an instrument designed and shaped by God. Then what tends to happen is, I have set the boundary based on my own egoic reaction to the other. That will not help. That boundary is based on my filters. My filters could be wrong in the sense, the person may have no intention of hurting me. I feel this person is hurting me. It's very subtle. I may have experienced hurt as a child in the past through someone else. That becomes my pattern, my blueprint to assume everyone is going to follow that pattern. Now I meet someone and I set the boundary based on that. What tends to happen is even that setting the boundary is based on doership, because I feel the other is the doer and I am the doer myself. So what am I doing now is setting the boundary. It won't work, because I'll keep setting boundaries without this understanding that it is the ego with its sense of doership which is setting boundaries. Those boundaries we will feel are always being crossed, because the ego loves to feel that. Now, supposing someone has this understanding that nobody is the doer of their actions, others and myself, everyone is an instrument of God. Already, this dynamic of opposition, which is making me set the boundary, is not in operation, because I am now neutral and I am objective. So even the boundary I set now is quite different from what I set then. The quality is different, because you see, the ego can be very naughty. It feels I must protect myself from being hurt, so I'm going to set up the boundary, right? Now, if I pull out doership from the equation and accepting everyone for who they are, the need itself to set the kind of boundary I had in mind will drop. A lot of it will drop. Now, supposing I have someone in my environment who I feel is still stepping over the boundary, what is happening is I will draw a boundary not based on judgment. The boundary I set, you'll be quite surprised, in this case, is like drawing a line on water. Because I am not excluding the other person to the degree I was. Why? I accept them for who they are. Yet, if a pattern is being repeated, I have drawn a boundary without the load of condemning them, judging them, and hating them. The boundary I have drawn now is for peace of mind, not stay away from me, I hate you. So, by all means, we have to draw boundaries where we feel the need is there. But the whole approach to drawing the boundary is, let's say, a very porous boundary is drawn, you know? Because now we're open, yeah? Now we're open that the other person, everything is not wrong about them. Some great aspects are there. Why should I block that also? So it becomes a very fluid boundary in that sense. That is why this phrase, bring down the walls. The walls are the walls of the ego with its sense of doership. And I find by and by that if I was drawing a lot of boundaries earlier, that need is reducing. Yes, there may be a particular relationship where I feel that there's no scope. I draw a boundary, but yet I fully accept the other person for the way God has made them without any need to change them, or that I should change them or they should change. You see, I leave them alone. Normally, this person should change is one thing. I should change this other person and I should show this other person. That also happens. But with this acceptance, you leave them alone. God knows best. Let God sort it out. So when I'm no longer imposing my views and projections on this person, the nature of my boundary is very different. Very different. Because then ultimately, the boundary we are drawing is a boundary between me and God. Now, again, to borrow from Joel Goldsmith, if I merge that with Rameshji's teaching, my understanding, if you accept everyone the way God has created them, and if you accept the tenet in the Bhagavad Gita that no one is the doer of their actions, then your relationship is no longer with individuals but with God. The man of understanding's relationship is no longer with individuals in that sense. Of course, they are separate body-mind organisms who will come to him with their own background story. It's a relationship with God. So, the whole approach and reason for building these boundaries, which we still have to build if we feel that's the right thing to do, but will be different. Does that answer your question?
If the boundaries are built based on the aspect of doership, then it is just the conditioning manifesting itself in some way.
Yeah. He or she is doing this to me.
True.
You know, that is why sages like Ramana Maharshi literally had no boundaries, because in his heart, people would even sleep there in the night in his room. He was so available that there was no boundary. They were around him all the time. Not just him, so many masters. No boundaries. Accepting everyone the way they are.
Thank you.
Like the cliche of the astronaut who said that looking at planet Earth, I could not see countries separate from each other and borders. I saw it as one undivided whole. Boundary is the same as bandhan, bound. Boundary. Who is the one who's bound in the boundary? What do you say, Ashwini? What are your thoughts?
Blank.
Oh, lovely. Blank slate. I remember I had gone to meet someone, a master, who obviously knew that my parampara was Nisargadatta Maharaj, etc. So he started criticizing Nisargadatta Maharaj. The minute I walked in, others were around, and he started criticizing Ramesh Balsekar. And I sat. I didn't say anything. Then at the end of it, this boy asked me, how could you tolerate that? He was criticizing your guru. I said, he's entitled to his point of view. It doesn't have to be mine. Who am I to stop him? But I have not come for that. I have come to him for other reasons, for other aspects which I really like about him. So I take that and let the other aspects be. Doesn't bother me, truly doesn't bother me. Now, having said that, supposing I go another time and again he is criticizing, that time I may get up and leave. I don't know. But either way, I am not condemning, blaming and accusing him of anything. That's his view, isn't it? I don't have to convince him that my teachers are not worthy of criticism. That's not my job. So, what does it matter? That time, I was okay. Another time, I still am not the type who'd say something like, how dare you? Who am I to say it? It's a free country, right? He's entitled to. And I'm entitled to leave if I feel like leaving. And after that time, there was no further criticism, and I met him many times since. It's okay. So you see, when this starts becoming our approach with people, you're just open to different aspects of a person's personality. Some may be pleasant, some may be unpleasant, but you are not in opposition to it. That is what happens. you don't take the good and bad and throw it all out. That means you've rejected someone based on certain aspects of their personality. They may have other beautiful aspects, which perhaps you didn't look at because those other aspects were far stronger, the so-called bad ones, which you've labeled bad or unfortunate. And you rejected a person. But if you know, we all are in limitation. We all have these aspects. Some are nice, some are not nice. Some we'll resonate with, some we won't. By and by, you find that you are in harmony with someone, even if you don't agree with them. You see, that is what happens. But this comparing and judging does not stop. That's what happens. Even in the spiritual field, comparing and judging. Recently, someone shared with me a tweet from a very big guru's foundation, which took a subtle dig at another very big guru's activities, saying, while some people are doing so and so and so and so, we are focusing on this. What is the need? Are you that concerned with those some people? Be concerned with what you are doing. Or like I heard once, my guru's aura is 12 feet long. You walk into the gate and you can feel it. Someone told me about their guru. And that one, that famous guru, I could only see 3 inches around their body aura. And I said, but maybe that's your limitation. That's not the truth. Maybe you could only see 3 inches and your gurus, you saw 12 feet. That's your truth. It's not the truth. Obviously, the person didn't like what I said. And the fact is, it does take two hands to clap, whatever be the relationship. Both parties are playing their role. It may appear one is the victim, appear, but it takes two hands to clap. So in conclusion, harmonious relationships mean a quieter mind because the thinking mind does not have its hooks anymore. You cannot have a quieter mind and in harmonious relationships. Quite unlikely, let's put it that way. So if one finds that compared to 5 years earlier, 2 years earlier, 6 months earlier, if one is following any teaching or any path or any spiritual journey of discovery, there I would reckon is bound to be a change in relationship and peace of mind. Bound to be. We are together. It cannot be you get peace of mind and in harmony in relationships. It cannot be harmony in relationships and no peace of mind. It cannot be. Cannot be. And what a beautiful measure then to have. It's a measure now. The measure is there now. Peace of mind through relationships. Relationships with people. Relationships with events in my life. Relationships with my thoughts. As Goldsmith says, your neighbor is not your physical neighbor. Your neighbor is whatever is in your neighborhood. The biggest neighborhood is what's in your mind. Isn't that the biggest neighborhood? As Shafi Baba said yesterday, even the person who hurts you, think good of them and wish upon them well. It's very hard to do, no? But you will find that you wish them well. With this understanding, you really find that you wish people well. You are a well-wisher. Take all those who have hurt you, wish them well in your mind. Not that difficult to do. You like if people wished you well, so you wish people well. Simple. May God take care of you on your life's journey. Chalo. Ijazat hai? You know, that's so beautiful what it means. Ijazat hai. They are not asking permission from an individual. My will is to now leave, but I know my will is nothing compared to God's will. So I ask the other person, do I have permission to leave? Means I am already surrendered to a higher power, which might have a better interest than I do in myself. So when they say ijazat hai, that already shows that they are so open to the universe saying, stay on, wait a bit, or yes, you may go now. They are okay with everything. That is the meaning of ijazat hai.
So it is not the surrender to the individual, but surrender to the higher power to give the command through the individual.
Yes. That is why सूफी मास्टर्स डिसाइपल्स वुड नॉट डेयर टू टेल देम, अच्छा बाबा मैं अभी जा रहा हूँ, 5 बज गए, मुझे पिक्चर के लिए जाना है. वुड नॉट डेयर टू डू दैट. व्हेन यू आर देयर, यू आर देयर. दैट इज सरेंडर. नो, दे नो देयर प्रायोरिटी. इवन विद नाथ योगीज, यू वुडंट डेयर टू गो एंड से अच्छा नाउ आई एम गोइंग ऑन अ डेट सो सी यू, बिकॉज वॉट आर यू रिलेटिंग टू? यू आर नॉट रिलेटिंग टू एन इंडिविजुअल, राइट? You are relating to the source. It's okay with your friends if you say it. That's a different dynamic. But on this path, which is their path, particularly is the path of surrender. Sometimes the ego will not like that. I should have my own will when I want to leave, when I want to stay. Many people may not like this whole concept which they have of asking for permission, because it is misinterpreted. One can learn so much by just being in the presence. Not just masters, people. It's just an eternal learning. And how people are with one another. To end this satsang, I'll repeat what I mentioned once in a satsang long ago at Ramesh's place once. You know, there were 3 seats in front which were called the hot seats. Because the room was like a rectangular room. So to prevent Rameshji from looking here and there and being a strain, if you had to ask questions, you'd be placed in front. And that tiny room had about 25 people packed inside, if not 30. So there were 3 people in front. And so the first one is first engaging, clarifying his doubts, then the second and then the third. Now, the first one, I think he was Japanese, I'm not sure, but he was East Asian. Finished asking his questions. The one in the middle said, all my questions are answered, so I really have nothing to ask, though I sat here with the intention of asking questions. So the turn came of the third man to ask questions. And this man, so I'm in the middle, there's one man here, there's one man here, right? So the first man who spoke had this discussion, middle man didn't want to have, it was the third man's turn. The first man was told, can you then pass on the mic to the third man? And he got up, removed the mic, went to the third man, clipped it on him, told the sound engineer, is it okay? Came back, sat down. And the next thing Ramesh said was, this man has the understanding. Why? Because he treated the other like he would want himself to be treated, with such dignity, grace, and love. Spontaneously got up, went, clipped on the mic and came back and sat. Which is what? The understanding in action. That is why they say actions speak louder than words. But the problem in our lives are we put emphasis on words and we are not aware of actions. They go past us. We miss them. So many actions one could have missed because they were not expressed in words. What people did for us. Small things gets missed. This action could have got missed, didn't get missed by someone who saw. Yes, Suresh?
I'm more relieved when you say that if you don't have anything to share, that is also okay. That one will give me more relief than anything.
Yeah.
Because it is nothing there at the moment. And the compulsion is building up that tension is only will be there. When this is here, this tension is not relieved.
Just to end on what you said, people can be so uncomfortable if you just sit with them and say nothing.
I read somewhere, people treat you not the way you deserve to be treated, but the way you allow them to treat you. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
What do you make of it? People don't treat you the way you should be treated, but the way you allow them to treat you. So you can be doing, you can be extending for people, helping and all, but not necessarily. You know, in common schools, we used to always hear this line, I don't know in school whether you heard this, do unto others as you would like them to do to you. So your actions always come from an area of positivity and helping and, you know, that. But it's not necessary that you do it, you will get that in return.
But who decides how you deserve to be treated? Who decides that? you may think you deserve to be treated a certain way, but that's
because
what you think.
Doing that,
that's actually, what you think. You've set this standard about deserving to be treated a certain way. You see, this is a trapdoor for the ego. I deserve to be treated this way.
Like a sense of entitlement.
You could say, based on what you think is the way people should be treating you. Not the way God thinks, the way you think.
Mm. So the way you are being treated is the right way. That is, when the ego comes and says, oh no, no, I should be treated with more respect, or I should be elevated in some way, I should be put on a pedestal because see what I did.
Exactly. And the word should. I should be, I should be, I should be. According to whom should you be?
The ego, no?
Yeah. So that approach can create tremendous suffering.
It's a trap.
Tremendous suffering. Let God decide. Meanwhile, how do I treat others is what I'm concerned with. That's, I cannot control how people treat me. If I try to control that, it's going to create a lot of trouble for me. Because then I'm taking charge of the universe and being the commander, how people should treat me. But if I stay with my lot, what can I do? What is my relationship with people? What is my understanding of people? And I leave it at that. Then these shoulds and all are dropping away one by one. Then I am more concerned with the way I am, not the way
I should be,
not the way others should be, the way I am. Then those kind of projections and concepts drop away.
It's damn hard. You have to catch yourself at that point when you think, you have to keep catching yourself that, oh, now I'm operating through the ego. This is my ego thinking, this is my ego talking.
Too much hard work. Rather let it go and allow the teaching to do its job. Forget it. No need to keep catching yourself. It's too tiring because it is still at the level of the mind. I must catch myself. I must do this. I must do that. It's the same game of doership. But if there is surrender to a higher power, which is what the Egyptian sign is of surrender, above the mind, I allow that to step in. Bring me awareness when it brings me awareness. Maybe after the event, so be it. During the event, so be it. Prior to the event, even better. And I let it flow like that. And there's another big misconception here. I assume people are treating me a certain way. They may not be, but I may feel it based on my filters. You see, this is another very important thing. Someone may not be treating you that way. May not be. We don't know. We are seeing it through our filters, right? So we assume this person is treating me this way. But that assumption is already in place. That person may not be operating from that dynamic. We assume it. Like a person who keeps pushing your button all the time. You are assuming that they are treating you a certain way, treating you a certain way. But they must be just operating the way they are designed to, without the intent of pushing your button. But your button is being pushed.
Then how do you break that circuit?
We've just spoken all about this for the last hour and a half. It can only happen. Breaking the circuit can only happen. See, the recognition is there. The understanding is there. Let that break the circuit. Let God break the circuit. You can wrap this up.